First of all, doing a sound check. It's So can you hear me in the back? If you can, yay, good. If for some reason you can't hear during the instructions, please put your hand up, or please shout out, or please let me know. Because that's the only way that we can check that the sound system is working okay. Very good. So, I think everyone is here. Is there anyone missing? Please put your hand up if you're not here. He's not here. Very good. So, for today, I wanted to give some basic instructions. Yesterday, I did give a bit of an overview. If you can remember, especially I talked about a simile of the thousand petal lotus and what one actually does in meditation is, for goodness sake, do not concentrate. Because that's something which has been one of the missions in my monastic life, to try and make sure that people understand that the word samadhi is nothing to do with concentration, everything to do with stillness, learning how to be really still. If it's concentration, remember that simile, holding this, concentrating. Number one, it tires you out, it exhausts you, and after a while you cannot get into the deepest meditations. You can get close, it takes too much force, that tires you, but stillness, the idea of everything becoming so peaceful, so still, that, and once you get into a little bit of stillness, every type of concentration creates waves. It's a disturbance of the mind. So, instead of the goal being concentration, stillness. And then from stillness we get the insight and the freedom, not through concentration. Otherwise, this would be called not a retreat camp, but a, you got it, concentration camp. So, calmness, stillness, letting go, non-grasping, all those words you may have heard, even kindness. Kindness is opening the door of your heart to this moment. Not making this moment pure and exactly what you want, and then you're kind. But no, to be kind to anything, whatever's right here. And then it calms down, it comes nice and still. So that simile of the thousand petal lotus, you can start with anything, literally. Any human being. Of course, they say some people who have murdered their mothers or fathers can't become enlightened. But other than that, you can. As Obama once said, yes, we can. He knew something about Buddhism. But what it meant was, it's possible for you. It is sometimes it takes a little bit more confidence, some time, to actually open up that lotus, which is you. And so you start again, body awareness. And it's not just being aware of the body and enduring, it's doing something about it. Once there was a very wealthy woman who went to the temple to listen to a talk. But because she was wealthy, and because there were many burglars in the area, she told the gatekeeper of her house, be mindful while I'm away at the temple. Because there's many burglars, and they've robbed many houses close by. Be mindful. And so she went to the temple, heard a nice little talk, and enjoyed herself there. And then, when she came home, she found her house had been ransacked. So much stuff, valuable stuff, was missing. So she told her God, "Why didn't you follow my instructions?" He said, "I did, madam. But we've been robbed. I told you to be mindful." "But I was mindful, ma'am. I saw the burglars going in, and I was mindful, burglar going in, burglar going in, burglar going in. I saw them taking out your jewelry, jewelry going out, jewelry going out. They packed in their van, I saw a van going in. They put your safe on the back of the van going out, safe going out with it. I was mindful all the time." Would that be enough? Of course, it's not just being aware of your body, it's getting to know her, how she works, how to be comfortable, what type of pains you can just, they're passing, you can leave them alone, they'll go by themselves. What type of pains or aches you really need to do something and just change your posture a tiny bit. What type of scratches you need to scratch. What type you can just leave alone, they'll go by themselves. You really get to know your own body. If you aren't wise and kind to your own body, how on earth can you be wise and kind to something which is far more refined, your mind? So, you learn about your body first of all, how to relax it, how to make it nice and peaceful and happy, and you're patient. Even say, sometimes I tell gross stories, actually many times, because people remember them. Even when you go to the toilet and you haven't got much time, what happens if you use force? Hemorrhoids. So relax. If you relax, then you don't get sick. It may take a bit longer, but everything comes out and you're healthy. So be careful. Look after your body, first of all. And once you're mindful of the body, know how to relax it, then your body's not a problem. You can sit for hours. And I also say, remember, just be kind to your body. If you need a chair, sit on a chair. And sometimes body awareness is so important. Often I tell people, look, I'd rather have people comfortable and getting deep meditation than actually being respectful. In the sense, I don't mind if you stay on the back lean and put your legs out. You put legs out, even you're not supposed to do that if the Buddha statue is in front of you. I've never seen the Buddha statue complain. But if you're, as long as you're doing it through kindness, not through laziness. It's a very gentle path. So look after your body. Now once your body is looked after, of course, then you go, you're free to go into your mind. This is, remember what I said yesterday about the present moment awareness. For goodness sake, you're here on this retreat. This is a past free zone. You don't have to carry the past in here. Leave it outside. Do you bring your shoes into this hall? No. When you take off your left shoe or left sandal, that's the past. You leave it outside. Your right boot, that's the future. Leave that outside. And so come in here, in the present, having a peaceful time. You can pick up that past later. There's one thing, I've argued this with psychologists, and eventually that they say, well, it works. You are allowed to let go of everything in the past. You don't have to carry it around. There's no reason why you must burden yourself with what I call the coffins of past experiences. So I like visualization. I visualize all these coffins people carry on their heads, all the past moments which are now dead. A lot of times it's because we think we have to learn from those past. We have to settle that past. We have to take revenge. But there's a saying, it's coarse, but people remember it. He said, and the saying goes, there's no need to seek revenge from the people who have hurt you. Karma will get the bastards anyway. Now you remember that, because it's gross. So, what that means is you feel free to let go. You deserve to let go. You weren't responsible. Somebody else hurt you. Why should you permit them to hurt you again? Every time you remember it, allow them to hurt you. It's not a good thing to do. In fact, I keep on doing these little stories. Any psychologist would actually ask you to bring it up first of all. Okay, bring it up once. Write it on a piece of paper what happened to you in the past, which you can't let go of. You think you can't let go of it. Write it on a piece of paper. But sometimes there's so much to write about what's happened to you in the past. And paper is very expensive. You have to use very cheap, very long paper. The best paper to use, you're ahead of me, is toilet paper. And don't just write it down in a ballpoint pen. Felt pen, dark brown color. You are making an association, a link. You write down all that stuff which happened to you on dark brown, in dark brown ink on toilet paper. And you make a very powerful association with the other stuff which is the same color which you put on toilet paper. How many of you to conserve paper and to protect our world use both sides of the toilet paper? How many of you, if you've only got a little bit of brown in one corner, fold it up, put it in your pocket to use next time? That's what you're doing with the bad memories. Carrying them around with you. It doesn't make any sense at all. When you associate it with the dark brown which goes on toilet paper, those memories, you don't know what the problem is. And number two, you have to do a ceremony to let go. You can't just say, let go. You do need to do a formal, official ceremony. And of course, you know where that ceremony takes place. In the throne room of the toilets. Go into the toilet. You better not do this at Gaia House, otherwise I'm sure the plumbing will all be stuffed up. So maybe when you go to the railway station or somewhere, but I'm getting in trouble with the railway station now. So, at home, go into the WC, read it again, all the stuff you want to let go of, and then you put it in the bowl and do the ceremony. You can even, if you know any chanting, Anicca Vata Sankhara, impermanent are all sankharas. Press the button, and let the toilet paper, with all of that pain of the past, go away. You'd be surprised that works. Sometimes people think this is just jokes. I tell it funny so you remember it. So the first time I told that, all these psychologists, psychiatrists in Sydney were busy writing it down. And I told them, what are you taking down? You've got the... Are you taking it down in brown felt paper, a brown ink on toilet paper? But they got it. This is how it can work. So, let go of the past, for goodness sake. And become right here, right now. This world is not a bad place in this moment. Thinking about it. And the same with, look outside, it's a very stormy day. Looking through the window just before I came out here, it was beautiful. To see nature, see the winds howling, and the trees swaying, and the rain beating down, and you're inside, safe. Sometimes nature is just such a wonderful healer. But you cannot appreciate nature when you are still thinking about and carrying the past. And as for the future, look, I don't know, some of you may be older than I am, but I've lived long enough, I never know what's going to happen next. What was it in the climate emergency when I was about 1920? We really thought there was going to be a nuclear war. I was prepared. I learned how to drink miso. It was supposed to, anything sorted like that was supposed to protect you from nuclear radiation fallout. But anyway, worrying is not going to help. Especially now. Right now, the best thing is to be in this moment. As I said yesterday, this is where the future is being made. Come into this moment. Be here. Well, the next thing is your silence. So you can listen to the world. You can feel it instead of talking. There was even one of the great English philosophers from Liverpool, John Lennon. Life is what happens when you're busy planning something else. So, in this moment, silence. And then, in my opinion, then you can say you're mindful. In Anapanasati Sutta, basic teachings on breath meditation, mentioned in the first part of Satipatthana Sutta, this is what you do even before you go looking at your breath, establishing mindfulness as your priority. I'm not just a monk, not just a comedian monk, not just I know my Pali. Know those suttas in Pali. Those words, if they're slightly mistranslated, can cause a lot of problems. Establishing your mindfulness first, enough, so you can watch the breath easily. If you're going to plant some flowers or some shrubs in your garden, preparation of the soil is so important. If you're going to paint a wall, about 60% of the work is preparation. Sanding it, taking any grease off that wall, and then the actual painting is just so easy. Preparation is everything, so getting that mindfulness strong first of all. And then you can watch the breath with no problem. So, and these are not things which one aims for. Sometimes you have to put stage 1, stage 2, stage 3, stage 4, stage 5, because that's what our culture is used to. You know, you feel more comfortable that you're in stage 1, stage 2, stage 3. Just like you're in grade 1, O levels, A levels, first degree, second degree, third degree, whatever it is. I always remember some of the graffiti at Cambridge University. This was actually on the walls, actually it was on the walls of the physics department, exams kill by degrees. In other words, stop measuring. Because then what happens? Present moment, silent, you're mindful. Then you are able to watch your breath. It just comes to you. And it just becomes more easy to watch. You see more of your breath. And it becomes delightful. And please, 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 don't be afraid of the delight in meditation. Some teachers, and they really should be scolded, keep saying that don't have any happiness, you'll get attached to it. Attachment is good in certain circumstances. If you're riding on a bicycle, or even more apt, if you're riding on a motorbike in busy traffic on the back, please be attached. Don't let go. So Because of that, we must know when is the right time to be attached, when is the right time to let go. In the simile of the raft which the Buddha gave, and a very often quoted, yes, you must not be attached to the raft, but you cling on to it until you've crossed to the other side. Then you let it go. You don't let it go when you're in the middle of the river. That is dumb. So instead, we are attached to that joy and happiness when it's very delightful breath, because that will take you deeper into your states of stillness. Even, don't have too much time in this retreat to take you through all these different angles of meditation, but when I'm sitting here calming my body down, first of all, doing the mindfulness of the body, relaxing it, it does get to a stage where my body is really peaceful. And I stay there, delighting in a peaceful body. Sometimes you see people at a beach, on the recliner, sitting down there with their feet out in the warm sunshine. And they do that, their body feels great, it feels delightful. And they get deeper relaxation. Or you have a massage, and after the massage, oh, it feels just really every muscle at ease. Does that feel good? Yes, it does. I've never had such a massage, but I do that sitting cross-legged in meditation. The body just really relaxes, and I feel it just so at ease, tingling with the pleasure of relaxation. When I'm aware of that pleasure of relaxation, the relaxation goes to a deeper level. The body relaxes even more by itself. And I notice that the same with my breathing. When I start to notice how pleasant the breath can be, breathing in, then I find that the breath gets even deeper into stillness. The delight has a purpose to it. It's what is the glue which attaches your mindfulness onto the object, which means it doesn't go all over the place. So, we get that delight in the body. One of my really good friends, one of the other monks who was expelled from Wat Pa Phong for being kind to nuns, Ajahn Gunha. He was a great monk. He was the monk who, sitting meditation in the jungles with a few other monks, a king cobra came up to him. And all the big animals, so people realized there's some danger there, they all opened their eyes. And the king cobra came right up to the head monk, to Ajahn Gunha, lifted up its head, opened its hood, right in front of Ajahn Gunha's nose. In those king cobras in that part of northeast Thailand, they gave them a nickname. It was called, the translation into English was, the one-step snake. They called it one-step snake, because once it bit you, you only had one step, and that was it, dead. Highly venomous. So what did this monk do? Get up and run? Waste of time. Those snakes can really run fast. I've seen them, it's scary to see how big snakes can really just go so fast. So what this monk did, he lifted up his hand. The other monk saw this, I wasn't there. Other monk saw it, lifted up his hand and patted King Cobra on the head, saying, thank you so much for visiting me. What did the King Cobra do? It's such a rare opportunity to get your head patted when everyone else hates you and is scared of you. So the king cobra was lapping every moment. Oh, this is wonderful. Especially if ever you meet a monk like that, you understand, beautiful energy. And the king cobra, very happy, until the king cobra, you know, had enough patting.
The light's gone.
The light. Can you hear me at the back?
It's gone.
It's gone.
Oh, my goodness.
Battery.
Okay. Okay. You're just getting into the story. Okay. That'll do. So, can you hear me? No. Yes. Okay. Can you hear the back? Yes, okay. So, we just paused for a commercial break. Now we're back into the action. So, the king cobra, enjoying every moment of it, but then poor monk's hand got a bit tired. So, Agagana put his hand down, and the king cobra drew in its hood, went down on the ground, and slithered over to the next monk, head up. And the next one, no, not me, go back to him, I'm not going to try that. But that's the sort of monk, and his meditation, he spent a range retreat in Perth with me years ago, and we asked him to teach meditation. I know his meditation method, straight to the point, no messing around, but it depends upon this Thai word, sabai. If any of you have been to Thailand, sabai means nice and easy, relax. Ah, oh, wonderful. So he said that when you watch the breath, you watch the breath as you breathe in, sa, breathe out, ba, breathe out, sa, ba. Oh. Now we'll try that. Breathe in the most sabai breath you've ever breathed in your whole life. Come on, try it. Breathe in sabai. Ah, oh, breathe out sabai. Breathe in sabai. Breathe out sabai. Okay, that was his only meditation instruction. Nothing more. It works. Straight away, your breath is something which you add joy to and happiness to. It's nice. And what that means, it's really easy to watch. And it becomes sabai anyway, after a while. Important part of meditation. Important part of mindfulness. Your mind, this is just one way of looking at it. Your mind has two parts to it. The active part, which is thinking, arguing, planning, remembering, the thing which reacts to whatever comes up into your senses. I call that the doing mind, or the doer. It does stuff. The other half of the mind is a passive mind. It is the knower. It is just receives information. The other part deals with it. The knower and the doer. And most people have 90% of their energy, at a minimum, sucked up by the doer. We have to do so much. Think so much, plan and carry around the past so much. We do so much in our life. Hardly anything is left for just mindfulness. Which is why when we do let go, we fall asleep. Sleep deficit, that's all it is. Just catching up. Your poor brain takes over, say, I've had enough of all this doing, I need a rest. So, that's the doer. But when you learn how to meditate, the doing, the reacting, the thinking, the planning, remembering, the arguing get less and less and less and less. It releases much more energy into the knowing, into mindfulness, You literally wake up. People think they're awake, but they're like, as they say these days, dead men walking. They're not really there, not really alive, not really receiving the information of the world. Which is why I call it the difference between mindfulness, power mindfulness, and superpower mindfulness. Just as a way of understanding, your awareness has different levels of clarity and power. And when you get this superpower mindfulness or power mindfulness, whatever you see, it's incredible to see a world in a grain of sand, a heaven and a wild flower hold infinity in the palm of your hand, eternity in an hour, that William Blake poem I don't tire of quoting. That means you're really getting aware. Small things open up and you see so much in them. That's where the meditation really gets interesting. You don't have to try. Your mind starts to be very sensitive. Small things, or just the sound of the rain. It's like the greatest percussionist, soft rain falling on the leaves. You can hear everything of it. And that just really makes this meditation, wow, this is really interesting and great fun. Soon you'll be doing your walking meditation. As you're doing your walking meditation, it's so similar to the breath meditation. First of all, you just get yourself on your path, wherever you're going to walk, and you just relax. I don't know how you do the walking meditation here. Do you do it in circles or choose your own path? I'm not quite sure what you do here.
There's a hole and you do it horizontally.
Horizontally, mean you're on your belly. I'm a weird mug, you know. You mean actually in a line and back again? One of the great things about doing it that way, you start in one end, you go to the other end, and you walk back again. You ever notice you don't get anywhere? You end up where you started. That's very deep. People spend their whole lives trying to get somewhere. And we always end up where we started. You start this life with no hair, you end it with no hair. Sometimes I have no hair in the middle. You start this with no teeth. You end it with no teeth, unless you've got a good dentist and have implants. You start it wearing nappies, finish off wearing nappies. But actually, you know, there's one part of the human body. Oh. Which never, it gets stronger with age. You know, your ears go, your eyes go. Sometimes, you know, you need a stick to walk, your legs are weak, and memory goes, but one part of you gets stronger and stronger and stronger every year you get older. And what is that? The mouth. You look at old people. My goodness, they can talk. But anyway, actually, I talk too much. That's why I haven't joined yet, but I'm going to start a therapy group for people like me who talk too much. You've heard of Alcoholics Anonymous? This is called Anonymous. So I think we should start a chapter in Gaia House for teachers. So anyway, just going back to superpower mindfulness.
Walking meditation.
Well, it's the same thing. Okay. Walking. So, walking meditation, as we're doing the walking meditation, you know, we get in the present moment. So we start, don't get anywhere, starting off. And then we're just watching our feet move. You can put your attention 2 meters in front of you, or just a body length in front of you is enough. Just so you're not going to step on anybody. And so you know before you hit the wall, so you can turn around. So, eyes, you know, maybe a body length in front of you, Not looking to the left, not looking to the right. Remember, walking meditation is not an Olympic Games to see who can walk the slowest, which is sometimes what happens. So, she's walking really slow. She must be really mindful and enlightened. I can't allow that to happen, so I'm going to walk slower than her. I've seen that competition which happens. Do it naturally. Or some of the slow walking which happened in Perth. Once in my retreat centre, we had a Sri Lankan family with their kids. They just wanted to have a look. They promised they'd be very quiet. And they went into the retreat centre, had a look. They came back. And the kids, they were terrified. They said, "Achambram, achambram, achambram. You have to go over to your retreat centre now." Said, "What's wrong? What's wrong?" "It's been invaded." "Invaded? By zombies." Lifting, 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 walking, walking, walking. That's the only time they saw, the kids thought the walking meditation really slow were the same as zombies. And apparently there's a lot of similarities. So sometimes we call that zombie meditation. But anyway, let's go back to real walking meditation. So as you are walking, first of all, left, right, like the breath going in, breath going out. Simple. Have you noticed when you're doing walking meditation, once you really get into it, you can actually feel just the first part of your foot which leaves the ground. And feel it as it moves above the ground, as it moves forward. And the first part which touches the floor, the last part which touches the floor. And just as you transfer the weight of your body from the leg which has been still, to the leg which is now on the ground, to free the other leg to move. You see all the different movements of the foot, just like the full awareness of the breath breathing in from the very beginning to the very end. You see the whole of it. And after a while, weird, but one step is so many movements of the muscles are required to actually to one step. Anyone who's been a dancer would know that. Anyone who's, fortunately, if they've had a stroke and have had to learn how to walk again, learn how complicated is just one step. And you're learning all those muscular movements, and it's fascinating. What you took for granted as just, you know, just walking is a whole thousands of different movements all put together. See a world and a grain of sand, a heaven and a wild flower. You're seeing amazing stuff here. And the more you look at it, the more beautiful it becomes. So you get really into walking meditation, just walking up and, oh, that's nice. Because the reason why it becomes beautiful, because you're not doing very much. You're not planning. You're focused in this moment because it's nice, because it's beautiful, delightful. And soon gets so quiet, it's delightful. You're actually enjoying it. And when you enjoy the walking meditation, it's like enjoying the sitting meditation. It's fun. Sitting here, just watching the breath go in. Sabai, sabai. Don't be afraid of the happiness. It comes up naturally. In the Anapanasati Sutra, it's called Piti Sukha. And it is not inherent in the object. It is a Chitta Sankara. In other words, it's what the mind adds to the reality. How you look at it. The mind enjoys this. Because the energy goes into the mind, and the mind wakes up, energized, and sees deeply into things, and it becomes fascinating. And as you go deeper, when I say this, some of you come, I'm not quite sure, I don't know most of you, so I don't know exactly how deep you've been before, whether this is your first meditation time here or you've been many meditations, but what happens next is the juicy part of meditation. And that's, you know, where, you know, basically that I teach this a lot, and you know, that's one of my fortes in teaching. Is when the breath gets so joyful And the joy, the bliss, exceeds the awareness of the breath. So what you're now experiencing is like some bliss. And weird states of mind, number one, they should never be considered as scary. Buddha experienced those things. If any of you are scholars, that's all talked about in the Upakalesa Sutta, in 128 of Majjhima Nikaya, all about these, what they call nimittas, beautiful lights in the mind. They happen when the body, feelings in the body, have mostly calmed down. They're not disturbing you anymore. You got your eyes closed and sight is switched off. Feelings in the body are just about switched off, and sound doesn't disturb you anymore. It's like you're 1,000 miles away from the nearest sound. And you're enjoying just being with this radiant, beautiful mind. The Pabhasarajita, the radiant mind. What does course that mean? You see a nimitta and it's right in front of you. As plain as the nose in front of your face, and is in front of your face if you want to think of it that way. Beautiful light. Too many meditators get scared. We never heard about this, what should we do? Ah! And they spoil it all. The two big problems are fear and excitement. Fear because you're out of control. You just have to let this happen. Natural process. You, the control freak, your will, can't come in here. And that's why people think, what I can't control, I'm afraid of. It's totally safe. I've been teaching this for years and years and years, and I haven't had any casualty yet. But I had a lot of blissed out meditators. So, what happens is the breath gets so soft, delightful, and then what you're left with is beautiful lights in the mind. They're called the nimittas. All different types of lights. Complicated ones, first of all, but doesn't matter. You focus on the most beautiful part of the complicated ones. A good example of that is one nimitta I got years ago of beautiful English countryside with a nice little river in the valley and lots of oak trees and cows grazing in the summer. Do they graze in the summer? Yeah, they do. Graze in the summer sunshine. Beautiful cotton clouds wafting over in the sky. Always beautiful, but that's really too complicated. So, look to one of the trees. On the tip of one of the leaves on one of those trees was a dewdrop which sparkled. That's all you need is a sparkle. And you allow your mind to be drawn in to that sparkle. You always go for the most beautiful part of the most beautiful part and most beautiful part. In the days when I first started describing this, they didn't have things like Google and Google Maps. So these days, zooming in to the most beautiful part. You're zooming in, the beautiful part dominates. And in that beautiful part, the most beautiful part, the most beautiful part, zoom in on that, and zoom in, and zoom in, until you've got a beautiful, blissful nimitta. Wonderful light. And of course, sometimes people say, oh, it's just too much for me. Sometimes that light, early years, this happened to me. I think, wow, I'm going to go blind. It's like looking at the sun, only the sun is not as bright. But you don't go blind. This is a mental image, nothing to do with the sense of sight. That's turned off a long time ago. It's a mental image. Other times, now this is really cool, other times you think it's too pleasurable, that you can't take so much ecstasy. I don't mean the drug, I mean this is like inside thing. You can. See if you can beat the Olympic record for blissing out. Of course, there's no comparisons. It really is happy. This one gentleman came to monastery in Australia simply because he was a heroin addict. He had this incredibly supportive wife who was, you know, just, he's a really nice guy. But he took one dose of heroin and he got addicted forever. And anyway, he was trying to, you know, to kick the habit in a monastery where it was too supportive, safe. No one was going to harm him there. And so the point that, but he told me once, he said, when you have an addiction like that, 1,000 times every day he has to say no to keep off the habit. One time he says yes, and he gets back on again. So that's how he described it to me. So anyway, but he was doing some meditation, and he was the guy who came up to me one day. He ran up to me and said, before you go, I was going into town to give a talk, and he said, I must let you know this. I always thought that meditation, when you get into these really deep states, you know, you can have like a bliss. Again, please, I have to say this because there's no other way of saying it. A bliss better than orgasm. And I was a very active, sexually active young man before I became a monk. Since I became a monk, I've been a very good monk. But at that time, I still remember, bliss better than sex. And he said, yeah, I thought, you know, that was the case, but apparently heroin high is much better than sex.
No. Oh, sorry.
How do you know? You loose nut.
You, it's a recorded, you know. Yeah. Life, it's live streamed, isn't it? No. It's okay. But anyway, that's what he said. That the bliss that heroin is better than sex. But he said, I never thought that these deep states of meditation, I would ever say that that's better than heroin. And that again sort of really blew me because, you know, obviously I've got no experience, first-hand experiences with heroin, but for him to actually to say that, he said, that was amazing. He had the experience of, you know, both. And now he managed to fluke a deep meditation. So that's the sort of thing we're dealing with. Powerful stuff. So, why is it powerful? And the reason is because you've let go of a lot of attachments, a lot of burdens. It's like you've been carrying this backpack with rocks stuck inside of it. You don't know why you've been carrying this heavy burden, but somehow or other you think you have to. And somebody comes along and says, hey, you can throw those past and future rocks out of your back. So you do that. You can check out thinking for a while. You start to feel light. This is good. Throw out your body and the five senses. Then you're flying. Ooh, this is neat. This is beautiful. This is wonderful. You're blissing out. And you're also finding out the insights. I have to go through this pretty quickly because you usually do this stuff over many weeks. But afterwards, it's like the best simile which I've managed to concoct is a simile of the tadpole. So once there was a little tadpole who was born in a temple pond. It was a very advanced temple pond because it had a school for tadpoles. So she went to the primary school and did very, very well and managed to go to a tadpole academy where they taught her the very, very best, especially in chemistry. Chemistry was her strength. So she did her A-levels in chemistry. She did so well, she went to a university, even in the pond, where she majored in in water, in hydrology. So she got a first degree in water science and then a PhD in the nature of water. And even because it was in a temple, she sometimes heard great sayadaws speak on the Abhidharma of the nature of water. She was an expert on water. But can a tadpole really know what water is? When she's lived all her life in water, born in water, grew up in water, studied in water. A fish can't know the nature of water, no matter how intelligent the fish is. No more than a little tadpole can know what water is. She knows her theories. But one day, little tadpole starts to grow appendages. She starts to grow legs and arms. Little tadpole is becoming a frog. And one day, once those arms and legs are strong enough, little tadpole, not knowing what she's doing, jumps out of the pond for the first time in her life. And now little tadpole, sitting, squatting on the banks of her pond, notices something really strange. Something which has always been there is missing. She works it out. It's water. Now that's what water means. That's what water is. This stuff which is now missing. Only then can little frog now know the nature of water. In those deep meditations, once your five senses disappear, totally disappear, now you know what those five senses are. Seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching. You heard about that from teachers sitting in the place I'm sitting here. And now you know from your own experience. The body's gone. Oh, what bliss. That's only the start of things disappearing. As more things disappear, more bliss comes up. Things which were always present for you, which you could never notice because they were always here, disappear. Then you understand what they are. That is called anicca. Anicca is not rise and fall. That's a very superficial, even misleading translation. Even Ajahn Chah used to describe it, mind there, uncertain. It's here one moment, then gone the next. Things which are stable for you disappear, they're unstable. Something always there has disappeared. Anicca is not seeing the waves on the surface of a lake go up and go down. Anicca is sitting by the lake and seeing the whole blooming lake vanish. It's not supposed to do that. These are experiences which shock you, but which are real. And those are the ones which really get you into the path of enlightenment. Seeing things disappear, unstable, gone. Poof. That's what happens in these deep meditations. So, people say, oh, that's way above me. No way. Too many people I've met have pressed the letting go button and get into these really amazing states and want to ask me, what the heck went on? But the first lay people who did this, when they came up to me and I said, what did you really do? What was special this time? This is one of the teachings I have to give you because people say, well, yeah, it sounds very good, but how do you do it? Does it take a lot of hours and hours and hours and hours of meditation? Depends. But the first person I asked, what did you do special this time? And the words which they answered, which I always remember, I really let go. Emphasizing really let go. And the second person who did this, I asked them, and my golly, they said exactly the same words. I really let go. That's the key. I think the third person, they said the same, and afterwards I never asked again. You know what happens, you've got to really let go. 100%. Put that cup down and wait. Allow your mind to be still. You are not in control. Put it down and be still. So that's actually what happens. But even if you don't get that far, just being able to watch the breath, just breathing in, breathing out, and giving your poor old brain a break, giving it a holiday. People think and worry so much. You don't need to do that. You belong. One little story for you is that sometimes people come to these retreat centers, or they come to meditation thinking something's wrong with them. And can you please, Mr. Monk or Mr. Nun, can you please sort of help us be at peace with ourselves or get rid of these traumas from the past or anxiety or depression, stuff like that. And one of the stories which I told even last night was, or not last night, yesterday somewhere, or the day before somewhere. When you live in the present moment, your past becomes timeless. I once gave this presentation, I get to many, many interesting events, on dementia and the spiritual part of dementia. First of all, this doctor was in Singapore, one of the Singapore hospitals. This doctor, professor of dementia studies, came up and he said that signs of dementia are that, you know, you can't really remember the past, you don't really project onto the future, and you're socially disengaged. I thought, oh my goodness. That's what we teach in meditation centers. Let go of the past, let go of the future, and just be an island unto yourself. Classic signs of dementia. I thought, oh my goodness, that's our fault. Buddhist monks and nuns create this. But no, that's only that. They got the point. This is something you do in a totally different way. You can turn on the past if you want, remember the past, remember the future, or plan the future if you want to, but you don't have to. Demented people, they just can't anyway. So anyway, we do worry too much about the past. And you know, a lot of it is we're worried about what other people think of us. We just want to be included, respected, and loved. So, at this conference which I got to on the, it's a mental health week over in Australia, and the conference was, it was brilliant, it was not for the professionals, it was for the clients. These were the people who had suffered, and the professionals were teaching them. So, I went in there, and one of the stories which really worked was the Simile of the Forest. Lots of forest around here. So if ever the rain stops, and you have time for a bit of exercise, and you have boots, see if you can go outside and find a perfect tree. A tree which is straight. A tree which has all of the branches all in the right place. With the leaves all green, well spaced, none of them eaten by bugs. With no damage to the trunk. See if you can find one of those. You won't be able to. Every tree is damaged, scarred, bent and twisted by the storms of nature. And in fact, don't go looking for the perfect tree. Go searching for the most beautiful tree. The one you like, the one you'd always want to go and visit again and again and again. And you'll probably find that the beautiful tree is not straight at all. It's bent and twisted. You'll find that many of the branches have been torn off from the storms like last night. And in those holes made in the trunk of the tree, that is where animals like squirrels or birds, or in Australia, opossums make their nests, and birds. And you see all of the branches all over the place. And the bark, the trunk, scarred by life. The most beautiful trees are always damaged. So if ever you call yourself damaged goods, you should know two things. One, you belong. You belong to this beautiful forest called humanity, human beings, life. And number two, you can be the most beautiful tree in the forest, the damaged one, the one that other people try to go through again and again and again. That's a different way of looking at things. So with wisdom is inclusion. For goodness sake, don't try and change yourself. For years and years and years, people have been trying for me to change, to lose weight, and don't tell such stupid jokes. But unfortunately, I just can't do that. I refuse to do that. Well, so, in other words, make peace with yourself as you are. Let yourself be. Let this moment be. And you'll find there's a huge transformation happens. Peace, acceptance. Don't try and change your breath. Be with it. Respect it. Love it as it is. Be kind to it. Have you ever been sort of rejected and just, you know, you're not good enough? However your meditation is, it's more than good enough. And then you find you're at peace. Breath just stays with it. It becomes beautiful. You enjoy simple things in life. So that's a huge amount of wisdom comes when you put the cup down and you let go. The two things to open the lotus, the mindfulness, the light of the sun, and the kindness, the warmth of the sun. Please, in your meditation practice, please, many of you are mindful, so committed, so just, you know, working hard, sitting on that seat for such a long time, even though your knees ache, your back aches, bum aches, head aches, everything aches. But so committed. But the one thing which people usually miss out on is kindness, compassion, love, joy. So please, in your meditation for the next however long we're here for, don't forget to be kind. And smile. Look, quick one. When I was, you know, I just went to this big university, Cambridge. I was a really stupid young man, even though I was good in maths. And I went to this club, because they were giving free sherry, really good stuff. I did always keep the five precepts. Got it out of my system when I was young. And, and free sherry, before I knew it, I'd signed up for the boat club. You know, where you're rowing these big boats down the river. Really hard work. How do I get into this? I know, too much sherry. So anyway, one day there's a big race, rowing this boat, really hard work. But I learned, one thing I learned from that, not just about the benefits of not taking alcohol, I wouldn't have been in that situation if I'd have been more restrained, but one of the things I'd learned next was the coach on the footpath had a megaphone, and he shouted at me, said, my name at that time was Peter, Peter, you're making an ugly face. Smile. It's all right for him to say. He wasn't having to pull his blooming oar, racing. But I was courageous enough to give it a try. So I smiled. You know what happened? that awe was easier to pull. And it was not so much pain. Simple things. So thank you, that coach. But when I meditate, smile. Get a boost of energy. It's so easy to watch the breath. When you're smiling, that's the other thing. I open my eyes, your posture is not good enough. I don't mean not back is not straight or your hands are in the wrong place. I mean this here. Make sure your posture, you pay attention to this. Horizontal is bad posture. Down here is worse posture. Up here, yeah, that's good. This is not jokey. This works. So if you can, put a smile on your face when you're meditating. If you can't put a smile on your face, fake one. It still works. And then meditation is much easier. Okay, so that's the talk for this morning, isn't it? Yeah. Right, 10:33. Walking meditation now. Back at 11, and yeah, and we do some meditation. Okay. So, very good, carry on. So, walking meditation now. Very good. Do we get that basket for the questions yet?
Yeah, it's outside. It's, how would I describe it? So, it's to the left side of the main notice board. Questions for this evening.
Very good.